So okay. I just encourage you to mute your line while Meredith goes to the presentation. And then especially if we get through it in a reasonable time, this actually enables us to have people do some introductions at the end if you the reward for sticking it through all the way to the end. Meredith, I'll turn it back to you.
Okay, great. So I have on my screen the application that I was looking at before. I don't know exactly where I cut off, but I was looking at one of the applications on our portal. Sorry, quick question. Did you all see me log into the portal and pull up the application?
No.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to go back for that then.
I saw you log in, like, right in the email, but then I didn't see how you got to pulling up an application.
Okay. So so once you log in, here's this list of applications. And so what I was saying before is that the ones that have been assigned to you and that you have not done yet, you have not reviewed them, have this green review button right here. And then since Courtney has reviewed applications for us before, she has a number of applications here that have this red done button here. That means she's already done them. She doesn't need to worry about them. They're the last cycle. And, you know, it goes all the way down to the bottom. But so these green ones are new applications that I've assigned her as an example. So when you want to pull up an application to review, you click on this green review button, or you can click on the person's name. I don't think it actually matters too much. And that pulls up the person's application. So so this is Abek Badarjerchi, and here's his application. So just to go through the sections of the application real quick, contact information, fellowship options. This is what I was talking about before. This is where they can indicate to which fellowship they're applying. So the answers here can be either Alice Corps Fellowship, Think Tank Links, or both. And so if they've put Think Tank Links here, then you should really be considering the criteria that I listed earlier in the call about Think Tank Links. Here is an eligibility quiz where we ask them certain, to make sure that they meet the basic requirements, such as that they're 35 years or younger, and so on. And then there's some more contact information stuff, their passport and visa history, and then here's where you get to actually some real content. The education and employment, they list their employment history here as well as their education. They list four of their top skills, such as, communications and marketing, fundraising, things like that. They can list their technical computer skills. They list the four areas, interest areas, where they have the most experience. So these can be things like youth development or public health, things like that. So, and then they provide some details here. The next section is language skills, self-explanatory. They have a section where they can list accomplishments, and then they have a few more statistical questions, making sure that they can pay a deposit and or a participation fee, and that they, if they have any special needs that we might want to consider, this is where they have a chance to list it. And then really the
Hey, Meredith, I'm going to have you pause for just 1 second, okay?
Okay, sure.
So for people, since this is a newer platform for some folks, I just want to point out a couple of things. Near the top of the Join Me link is a bubble, like a cartoon bubble to speak. You can type in questions into that cartoon bubble, and I will monitor it and answer questions. Also in the middle there is a magnifying glass with a plus sign. Personally, when I look at Meredith's screen, it looks very small. So you hit the magnifying glass, and it allows you to zoom in. Another option, of course, is to download the attachments that Meredith sent and to go along, because these, I'm almost positive, these are attachments that have,
At other examples. I attached our example applications. This is more than the platform.
Okay, well, then other parts of the call, you'll be able to actually go through the attachments at the same time, which will be a little bit easier.
Yeah,
and then my final point, Meredith, two more points. Make sure you just do *6 for everyone else in the line to mute your line. And then, Meredith, you're sounding a little bit distant for me, so I'm sure you're on speaker because you have to type at the same time. But if there's any way to get closer to the phone or even speak up, that'll probably make it easier for everyone to hear.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to actually take myself off speakerphone and speak into the actual receiver. Hold on. Can you hear me better now at all?
It's a little bit better, but I know it's hard to switch from speakerphone to actually handset. So why don't you hang up, call back in, and we'll do 2 minutes of introductions while you call back in.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Great. Okay. So, Amy, do you want to briefly introduce yourself?
Sure. Hello, everybody. My name is Amy Peterson, and I have just started as a Foreign Service Officer here in Monterey, so I actually get to see Scott on a regular basis, which is very nice. Before this, I was actually working in Azerbaijan, and I was managing educational exchange programs there, doing a lot of application review myself, both for the programs I managed, which were mostly youth exchange and professional exchange, with the Open World program funded by the Library of Congress. But I also did a lot of review of applications for the Fulbright program in its various varieties with the embassy in Baku. So I love working with exchange programs. I've been sort of involved with IVLP programs through state my previous job. I have a master's in education from George Washington University in international education. And I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Azerbaijan teaching English after I graduated college. I'm from D.C.
Perfect.
And that's about it.
Awesome. 15-second intros are tough, but thank you, Amy, so much for joining the selection board as well. Emily, we'll let you go next if you're still on the call.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. My name is Emily Dalkin. I live in D.C. I actually just moved back here after many, many years being away. My background's in political communications, and I've also done a lot of work in leadership development among young progressives. And I just started this week as the new director of press relations at the Peace Corps. So I'm really excited to be involved with this, which works really well in tandem.
Excellent, Emily. So excited to get you involved. So excited you're in D.C. Thank you very much for joining. And Eduardo, can you go next?
Yes, certainly. Hello, everybody. My name is Eduardo Estrada. I am originally from Bogota, Colombia. I know Atlas Corps since it started back in the day when Scott and Courtney were living in Colombia. I now live in D.C. I came here for graduate school at Georgetown. I did a Master of Public Policy. I currently work at the World Bank, and I have been a supporter of Atlas and had done a while back some application reading, and now decided to look into this as well. So excited to helping you guys with this process.
Awesome. Thank you, Eduardo. And Adam, I think our only fellow on the call right now. Can you introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Adam. I'm an Atlas Corps fellow. I'm serving here with Operation SMILE as program coordinator. I'm from the Philippines. And, well, in terms of my selection experience, I was actually like a selector before with voluntary service overseas in the Philippines, where we send like volunteers, Filipino volunteers all over the world. And, yeah, I'm excited to be part of in this other phase of Atlas Corps to be in the selection board.
Great. And I think Meredith just joined, but to wrap things up, we have about 50 people on our selection board, and we want to give this an opportunity for you to meet other really interesting folks. And a lot of them are in D.C., since many of you are in D.C. as well. It'll be nice. We'll invite you to lots of other events and network you on Facebook and things like that. There's probably about, of the 50, maybe 7 or 8 that are, maybe as many as 9 or 10, that are fellows or alumni. So it's always great to have their perspective. But it's also just a great selection board. We have lots of different perspectives and backgrounds on the mix, and a lot of young professionals in particular who are really impressive all in their own right. Meredith, I think you may have just called back in. Is that you?
Yes.
Okay. So my last bit is, I promise you, we're normally pretty good on this technology stuff, but we try some new things, and tonight we're having a little bit of trouble. But I can hear you a lot better now, Meredith, so I'm going to mute my line.
Okay, great. Yeah, like Scott said, we were trying to do this new platform so we could record audios and visuals at the same time. So there was a reason for it, I promise. Okay, so scrolling down to the bottom of the application is the essays portion of the application, and we'll go over that in more detail when we look at some applications. And up here, you can look at any attachments that they've made to their application. So actually, this applicant has attached a couple of unnecessary things, like his graduation speech and everything. That's really not necessary. The applications that we, or the attachments that we do require, are recommendations, and there may be an English test attached to their application. For Think Tank Links, there's a couple of additional attachments that you might see. But really, you don't need to look at these attachments too much. I just wanted to show you how you can look at them if you want to. So there are these gray tabs at the top. And then going back to the main page, just I briefly want to look at one that has a Think Tank Links a Think Tank Links application. So I'm clicking on this one. And by the way, I got back to this page by clicking on the Fellow app link at the top left. So you click on this one, Johansson. So he is Atlas Core Fellowship applicant and a Think Tank Links applicant. And so the way you can tell that is because under Fellowship Options, he's listed Atlas Core Fellowships and Think Tank Links. And for Think Tank Links applicants, we require a couple of additional attachments, including a writing sample and additional essay answers. So he's attached these at the top, so it is a complete application. If he didn't, then he, you know, that would have been a problem for him. So, and the other thing I want to say about Think Tank Links is also we have this question under eligibility where it asks them if they're currently employed in a research position, and sort of to describe their research background. This is something that you might want to look at to tell whether someone's a good Think Tank Links applicant. And also looking at their, you know, like I mentioned before, their education, their employment background. This person is working at an organization called Research on Poverty Alleviation, so that's perfect for Think Tank Links. He is a research officer in a developing country, so that's perfect. And under the skill set, he lists research as one of his top four skills. He has some computer skills here related to research, like SPSS and STATA are both research programs. But those are just things that you want to look at while you're judging an application for Think Tank Links and say, oh, is this person a good fit for Think Tank Links or not? Those are the kinds of things you want to look at. So that covers the sort of an overview of the application itself. Once you're ready to add a review of an applicant, you click on this green button at the top that says Add Review. And this has five criteria here on a score of 0 to 20, and it lists out some sort of guidelines here under each one and some questions to consider as you're judging it. It's in a way sort of subjective, but we try and quantify it as much as we can. So the five criteria are leadership skills and experience, fellowship matches with professional skills, professional goals. So like, is the fellowship the next logical step for an applicant? Does this make sense for their career path? Cultural skills and adaptability, professionalism and interpersonal skills, like, you know, this is something where you might consider how professional is their application, their writing, does it seem like they could fit into an American work environment and they have good communication skills? And finally, English proficiency, which is related, but this would be more like grammatical and spelling errors and things like that. So they're all on a score of 0 to 20, and you enter each score you want to put in these little boxes, and it automatically totals it up at the bottom. I only entered two, so right now it just says 38. But, you know, obviously it's a score from 0 to 100. And then you would write your comments here in the comments box. So things like, you know, their experience level. Are they a really experienced candidate, or do they seem more entry level? Where would they be a good fit? This person, you know, like this person would be good at a public health organization, or but they do not seem to be good for whatever. You know, do they have any special needs? This is where you can put sort of what we call red flags, and I'm going to go over that in a second. But things that make you think twice about their application, like visa denials. So we're going to go over this more in a little bit, but this is the kind of comments you put here. And the score, you know, adds up here. And then once you're done, you click the green submit button. This is very important because if you don't click the submit button at the end, it doesn't record the scores, and it basically you would have to enter them again later. It will just disappear. So make sure you click the submit button at the end, and the scores will go to us. And then, you know, you can go back to the Fellow app, the front page, and see what other ones you have to, still have to do. So that covers the WiseHive judging portal. I'm going to be, you know, once you guys are ready to start reviewing applications, I'll assign applications to you. I'll announce it to you guys and say, you know, hello, I assigned, you know, 5 or 8 applications to you. I expect it'll be about in that range, somewhere between 5 and 10 applications for each cycle, for each reviewer. And so you'll be able to log in and see your applications listed here. And this is where you'll be reviewing them and the platform you'll use. So let me go back to the selection handbook. Where is that? Right here. Okay, so I'm looking at page 5 of the selection board handbook. These are some just important guidelines we tell people to be aware of as they're grading applications. So one is that all the 60 is the cutoff score. Like I said, it's on a 100-point scale. Anyone below a 60 will be automatically disqualified from the running, and we would not consider them for the fellowship. We wouldn't forward them on to any host organizations. So below a 60, that's pretty much the cutoff point. Make sure to make a note of any red flags. I'll need to go over that in a second, but anything that could be a potential disqualifier, make a note of it on the rubric. And each application should take around 20 to 30 minutes to read, score, and register comments in the scoring rubric. It should take some time to, because these are rather lengthy applications, but we also don't want you to be spending like hours on each one. It really shouldn't take that long. So, you know, just some basic guidelines from us. Two suggestions here that have come from Atlas Core staff. One is to be detached. It can be really easy to get excited about someone who's doing this awesome work in, you know, developing countries, Bangladesh or Rwanda. And you're like, wow, this person's done so much, even though they've come from such a humble background. I'm moving to full screen here. But it's really important to evaluate the applicants the same way you would anyone else. The overriding question that you should be thinking about as you're reviewing applications is, how will this application look to a host organization? Would we be embarrassed to send this to a host organization, or would we be proud and confident in saying, this is one of the best nonprofit leaders in the world, the best rising nonprofit leaders? So, and you should be consider, you know, there is a cost share to hosting a fellow, and would I be willing to pay $30,000 to host this fellow at my organization? That's the kind of thinking you should have. You should really be having high standards for these applications and be detached in it. And then the second point here is to trust your instincts, and this goes with the last point. You know, you guys all have experience working in a professional environment. You guys have great instincts. That's why you're on our board. That's why we invited you. So feel free to use that knowledge as you're reviewing these. So now I'm going to skip down to page 8 of the selection board handbook. This is where we have the scoring rubric posted. I already talked about this a little bit, but it's also here in the handbook if you want to review it without, you know, going fully into the judging platform. And then also on page 10, this is, it's not a rubric, but it's some points that we've put to consider just as you're reviewing applications. So I know this might be a little bit hard to read because it's very small print, but general criteria here to look for as you're looking throughout the application, you know, have they filled out all areas of the application? Are they filling them out thoroughly with concrete details and examples? Are they... you know, do they articulate their interest in Atlas Core and what they expect to learn? Do they demonstrate a commitment to service? And can you see the applicant serving effectively day in and day out in a fast-paced, demanding environment? So those are some general questions. And then these other ones in the rest of this page here on page 10 are sort of what we call red flags, most of them. These are things that aren't necessarily disqualifiers. They wouldn't disqualify someone from being considered, but they would like the name says, they would raise a red flag in our minds and something that we would want to be aware of because it could make the fellowship year more different, more difficult. So the list all countries of citizenship, the applicant should be committed to returning to their home country. They shouldn't be a U.S. citizen, or even if they're a dual citizen, it should be very clear that they want to return to their home country. And it's very, very rare to have an applicant who's a dual citizen who we think is a qualified applicant, fits the eligibility requirement. The second thing here, marital status and children, that's listed in the background section as well. If they're married and they have children, it's not a disqualifier. We've had a number of fellows who have been married and have had children, but it would make the fellowship year a little bit more difficult. And they, most of the time, since we don't sponsor spouses or children on visas, they would not be able to. They most likely they would not be able to bring their spouses and children with them, and they'd have to be separated for a year. So it's just something to be aware of that we might ask more about in the interview, and we'll talk more about that in our interviewing webinar. The second section here for red flags is the passport information and travel. If they have extensive international experience, that's great. That's a plus. If they've been denied a visa, or if they have relatives living in the, like close relatives living in the U.S., those are things to be that are worth noting because they can make it a little bit more difficult to get a visa. So again, it's not something that disqualifies them, but something that we would want to be aware of and ask more about in the interview. For education and employment, if they have an advanced degree, this is more of a plus than a red flag. If they have a master's degree or a PhD, great, that is awesome. Actually, 2/3 of our fellows have master's degrees or higher, and so they would fit right in with our fellowship, and it would be really impressive to a host organization. So make a note of that if they have a master's degree. Again, this is another sort of plus sign to us. If they speak marketable second languages, major languages like Spanish or French or Russian, those can be useful to host organizations. Accomplishments, this section, even though these aren't necessarily accomplishments, they're in the same section with accomplishments. So can they pay the $500 deposit? We require applicants to make a $500 participation fee. And again, if they can't pay it, it wouldn't necessarily disqualify them. We can talk about payment plan options with the fellow if they're accepted, but really we want everyone to pay this. And it also bodes poorly for their year as a fellow if they cannot pay a $500 deposit. Secondly, a medical clearance form. They're going to have to provide a medical clearance form if they're accepted. So if they put no here that they can't submit a medical clearance form, that's a red flag to us as well. And finally, special needs. If they have physical handicaps, they might put it here. Again, not something that would disqualify them necessarily, but it would make it a lot more difficult for them if they have physical handicaps or something that could, for various reasons. For one thing, our health insurance doesn't cover pre-existing conditions. So there's some difficulties there that you would want to make a note of, and we would want to make sure that candidate is someone that we can fully support. And then on page 11, we've listed what we call gold stars. These are, things that just make a candidate stand out from the rest of the pack. If the rest of their application is very high quality, it just adds a little extra something that is that really makes boosts their application from good to great. So, for example, if they've started their own organization or other large initiative, that really shows leadership skills. If they have strong technical skills, like They know a lot of computer programs. They've built websites or they have statistical skills. That's useful. If they received a lot of prestigious awards, honors, or scholarships, that's useful. And if they've worked with large multinational NGOs that a U.S. organization would recognize and be impressed by, for example, UN, USAID, Red Cross, Habitat for Humanity, those are impressive to host organizations. And they see that on their application. They say, wow, you've really got some great applicants here. And hopefully they'll be more inclined to host a fellow that way. And if they can quantify their accomplishments, this is always impressive to me. If they don't just say, I did fundraising, but they can say, I secured a $500,000 grant, or I started a network that's grown to 5,000 members. Those are impressive specifics that not everyone provides, so that's really helpful when they do that. And if they've worked in a high leadership position where they've juggled a lot of different responsibilities, such as CEO or director or country coordinator, that's an impressive title that really means something to us. And so that covers our general tips on reading applications. This would be a point to stop and think. If you have questions, type them in the comments box. We'll get to them later. The next thing that I wanted to cover was to go over three example applications.
Hey, Meredith, because we're on a conference call,
it's
probably worth taking a 30-second break to see if anyone wants to ask one or two questions.
Sure.
Give your voice a little break while you pull up the next one. Any questions on kind of the quick overview of reading applications? We're going to get into more detail and looking at samples, but any questions?
Okay,
that's fine. We can keep going through, especially since we're a little behind schedule.
Sure.
But don't hesitate to type comments into that selection box, and we'll show you some sample applications coming up next.
Great. So actually, this application should be a lot easier for you to read. Okay, so it's actually easier to read this way. So this is an application from a previous cycle. We want to show you, like I said, one excellent one that got a 100, one that basically would be disqualified, they'd be below a 60, and this one that I'm going to start off with is one that's sort of more in the middle. It's pretty good, but it's not great. I put here at the top that it was scored at a 75. I actually think that's a little bit tough. I think this could be actually like an 80 or an 85, but we'll go through it and you'll see why. I want to explain why it's good but not like outstanding. This is one of the attachments that I include in my email to all of you, so you can both pull that up now if you're having a hard time seeing, or you can also look at this at your leisure later. All the comments are posted here in the application. And one other note before I move on and talk about the application itself, since I did mention already that we made a couple additional questions to with this application round, stuff with think tank links, these are not on these old applications here. So some of the questions I've mentioned earlier, like which fellowship program they're applying to, those questions are not on here, just because these are applications from previous cycles that I'm looking at right now. But that shouldn't faze you. And things are in a slightly different order. It starts with the eligibility quiz rather than contact information. But again, it's really the same content, so you'll be fine. All right, so eligibility quiz is what it starts off with. They're eligible because they put yes here for everything. Biographical information, not too important to look at. Contact information, so this is, we've changed the name to just applicant, just to protect their name. But so they list their date of birth here, and we just wanted to point out that, so this applicant here is, I guess, 28 now, which is right at like the average age for our fellows. But you would want to make a note if someone is particularly young or old. So remember, our fellows range from 22 to 35 years old. Our average age is about 28. So it's worth noting, this person's younger, they would really need an entry-level position, versus this person's older, they would really need a high-level position, because that helps us match people to the right fit for them. We'll go over this in the interview section, but here is their Skype address, which you'll be using in the interview, but you don't need to think about that right now. their mailing address and their home address, the place of birth. This is all not necessarily stuff you need to write, but I'm just pointing it out. When you scroll down to passport information, this is some of the stuff that I talked about in as far as red flags go. So there's this question of, have you traveled to the United States or overseas before? And it's good to know, like, this applicant here has been on a J-1 visa before, which is the visa program that our fellows are sponsored on, a trainee visa, or an exchange visa. So this is good to note because it shows, if they've been approved for a visa in the past, it'll be easier for them to be approved this time, and it shows that they have some experience traveling to the United States before, so they should be able to adapt easily. And scrolling down even further, this question, have you ever been denied a visa? Any visa denial is important to note. Like I said, it doesn't disqualify a candidate, but we can ask more questions about it in the interview. And it would be something maybe we'd warn a host organization about, like, this candidate may be a difficult visa because they've been denied multiple times before. Education and employment, sort of self-explanatory, but, this person does have a master's degree in development studies. That's fantastic. Please describe your current professional position. So this person has impressive experience as a country coordinator of an NGO. So they that's a leadership position, and it seems like they have well-rounded job experience here. I won't go through it word by word, but they're doing a lot of different things here, monitoring or managing a volunteer program. They're conducting orientations, developing projects, expanding partnerships. That's a wide range of skills, and that's good for them. And here's a question about years of experience. So everyone should have at least two, and we tell them that they can include volunteer experience here as well, or even experience in, like, the government or a socially minded for-profit business. That can be included here. It's a little bit flexible, but that's just sort of a guideline to show how experienced this candidate is. For their first employment experience, she has experience in the U.S. in a volunteer program. She was in Community Corps, which is in the U.S. And so although the program was of a different nature, it's important to note that she's been in the U.S. before, and that's solid experience. You can scroll down and read some more of her employment experience. And you would want to make sure, like, this timeline is sort of clear and that that you can tell what they did here. A lot of times people will put down employment experiences and it's not really clear what they did here. This candidate is, like I said, pretty good because you have a pretty decent idea of what they did at their job. So scrolling down even more. Okay, here's a section where they talk about their four strongest skills. And they actually only listed here a three here, but that's okay. I'd rather see four, but it's fine to list just three. If they just listed one, that's a little bit of a red flag. That would not be such a strong application if they've just listed one skill here, because they actually can check off from a list of skills here. So this person listed economic development, partnership and coalition building, and volunteer management. It's important to note that she has academic experience with economic development. It's important because we have candidates who have field experience, but the combination of field and academic is strong. Most of our fellows have a lot of field experience, but they're placed in an office environment here doing, maybe more office-related work. So it's important that she has, like, both kinds of experience. That's helpful. And then she can list details of her experience with the skill here. We say up to 100 words here. It's really good that she's listed some pretty strong descriptions here. Some people really only put, like, one sentence here. That would be a worse application. She's listed her skills pretty well here. And she puts strong partnership building and volunteer management experience, which goes along with her job descriptions listed above. Her application tells a unified story. I like this about her application, that what she was doing at her job matches what she says her strongest skills are. It it's all unified and makes sense. I get an idea of who this person is. They are good at, their strengths are partnership building and volunteer management. It's not confusing where they, you know, they worked on some things, but they don't list it as their skills. That can be sometimes a little bit confusing because it's hard to tell what their strengths are. But, yeah, so you can read on, I'm not going to go through all their skills here, but I encourage you to look at the samples I include in my email. You can read through these in more detail. And you'll be looking at applications a lot very soon as well. And then the next section is where they can choose up to 4 interest areas. Again, she only selected 3 here, not really a big deal, but the more flexible they are with interest areas, the more flexible or the more options they could potentially have as placements. This gives us an idea of what kind of organization they'd be a good fit for. So she's listed economic development and business entrepreneurship, environment and ecology, and microfinance. So here she's described her experience here. And so, for example, for economic development, she's actually just listed academic experience here. I'd rather see, like I said, that combination of academic and field experience is really valuable, and it seems like she's only listing academic experience here. But, you know, I'd like to see both, but it's not too bad. And her experience with in the environment is really solid here, and you saw that in her employment history that she's been involved with a lot of environmental projects, and that's solid experience. And again, here she doesn't have any practical experience in microfinance and microcredit, but she took a class on it. Again, you know, we like to see the academic, we like to see the practical. It's best when you can see both on their application. So language skills. Here's where they can put their English proficiency, and it says that she was taught English in school. Strong English skills are very important to fellowship. You know, we understand if they're using British English instead of American English, that's okay. I wouldn't judge them down for that, and it's okay if there's some grammar mistakes, some spelling mistakes, but really it needs to be readable, and her application is pretty well written. I wouldn't say it's perfect, but it is pretty well written, and the fact that she says she's fluent here, it pretty much matches with the rest of the application. I would be skeptical if they put fluent here and it was very badly written. And she speaks French, and I think because she's from Rwanda, and that is really valuable. We have had organizations request French-speaking Africans before, and that's helpful information to put in a review. Accomplishments, you know, we put candidates are not disqualified for not providing any awards or recognitions, but strong candidates have at least 1 or 2. She's basically just put her degrees here, so I wouldn't really count that as a significant award, but, you know, a stronger candidate would have some awards here that they've listed. But, again, it's not absolute requirement. Here's the questions I was talking about with the $500 participation fee, medical clearance form. Like I said, a no on any of these questions or a yes to the special needs question would not disqualify a candidate, but you should note it in your comments section of the review. And then finally, the essay section. And this is what can really, where someone can really take their application from good to great or from good to not so good. It's really a part where, you know, applicants differentiate themselves. So this first essay question, and we've actually changed the wording a little bit since our last application cycle for this question, but it's really important that they here's where they write a one-paragraph biography about themselves in the third person, focused on their professional background. And we this strong personal biography is extremely important, and we want it to be written in the third person because we actually basically just cut and paste this bio and send it to host organizations. That's sometimes the first thing a host organization sees from an applicant before they, you know, click on the attachment to read their application in its full form. So it's really important that they have a strong bio here to make a good first impression. And the ones where we have to edit their bio a lot before sending it to a host organization, those are less strong candidates. This person actually does have a pretty good bio here. And you know, they list some detail here. They start off with saying that they, you know, that their experience level and their education, which is just like our examples on our website. So it's clear she looked at that. And she lists her previous employment and what she did there. And it's pretty concise and but thorough. So it's a good bio. This is where I think her application sort of goes. Again, she differentiates herself from the really strong ones. Some of these essay questions are kind of short. We give them up to 300 words here. And you can see this is kind of short. It should be longer. And so this question, why do you want to be an Atlas Core Fellow? What do you hope to learn from the fellowship? They should be able to provide some specifics here of what are they really looking for? Why does this fellowship make sense for them in their career? And what do they hope to gain here? There should be a little bit more detail here. Why should a host organization select you as an Atlas Core Fellow? Again, this answer is pretty short. I don't think it's really a convincing answer. If you're a host organization, like the fact that they're excellent in Microsoft Windows applications, including email and the internet, it's just not totally convincing where you go, like, wow, I really need to hire this person. It's kind of like, eh. So it's kind of a short answer here, not great. But also, I mean, I wouldn't say it's the worst I've ever seen either. What is your plan for when you return home after the fellowship? We really want them to express that they want to use their experience back home, back in their home country. Again, this is kind of a short answer. She doesn't really give specifics of how she wants to use her experience. She just says, you know, she wants to keep being involved with nonprofits, share her knowledge. Like, it's kind of vague. So it's not the best answer. It's also not the worst I've ever seen, again. So, again, this is why she's getting sort of this middle-of-the-road score, these essay questions. Please describe both the major success and a failure in your career. This is an adequate answer but could use a little bit more detail. I do like that she provided a substantial, or I should say a specific failure here, you know, that she was not able to complete the school building that she led last December, and she expresses why she considers that a failure. I see so many applicants who do not list a failure, or they say, you know, I have not had a failure yet in my career, which is something to, you know, you can mark them down from it. Again, that wouldn't torpedo an application by itself, but you can mark them down if they cannot list a failure, in terms of, you know, you can mark them down on, like, professionalism or something like that, dock a few points. But this person, they do have a pretty good answer here. It's just not great. It could use a little bit more detail. Please describe an initiative you've led. So this is an extremely short answer. This is, you know, this is two sentences when we give them 300 words. So she does list an initiative, and it does say what she did there, but it could really be more detailed. The last question is, Atlas Core Fellows need to demonstrate a sense of adventure, independence, and cultural adaptability. Describe a past experience that reflects these qualities. So scrolling down, and this is the last essay question, this is actually a pretty strong response. It shows that she has the flexibility and sense of adventure needed to be an Atlas Core Fellow. So she talks about how she's lived away from home since she was 18. She traveled to the U.S. and volunteered with a nonprofit in Portland. You know, she's traveled to South Korea and Mozambique. She's really been to a wide variety of countries, spent time traveling the world, really had to be adaptable culturally. So this is a strong answer. She shows strong experience in terms of being culturally adaptable. This is the kind of response we look for in this essay. So, and that's the end of her application. As I've said, it's a good application. I can see her being placed at a number of the host organizations who send us descriptions, especially if they're sending us sending us a position that's in volunteer management or partnership building where she'd have to manage programs, especially if it's related to the environment. I could see that kind of organization being a good fit for her. She's not so outstanding that I'm saying here to myself going, wow, this person's outstanding. You know, I have to find a place for her. I really think she'd be a great fit at a lot of organizations. She's not that strong, but she is pretty good. I'd probably give her like an 80, like I said, or maybe even 85. There's no right answer or wrong answer, or I shouldn't say, or I should say, there's not the right answer or the wrong answer, but there's better answers and worse answers. And I think she's pretty good, but not great. So the next one I wanted to look at, and I'm going to try and breeze through these now that you've seen a full application and we've gone through it, but the other one I wanted to look at, so I'm going to show you a one that it's basically as good as applications get. It's got a 100, and it's actually from someone who is a current fellow. I know at least Adam may know him. This is our current fellow, Oladele Olagundoye. He's from Nigeria. He's right now serving up in New York with an organization called GBC Health. He's been here for almost a year. Really great guy and has a fantastic application, and I wanted to show it to you so you can see this is what an applicant strives to be, and he gave us permission to look at his application in our trainings. So I'm going to show it to you, and you'll see a difference. You'll see what makes this stand out. So I blacked out some of his personal information here, but if you scroll down to page 3, here is where and this is the same as the last applicant. It's important to note that he's traveled internationally. This shows flexibility and that he's been approved for a visa before. So he's been to South Africa and Scotland, so really had to adapt culturally there. Doesn't have any visa denials, great. Education, so he actually has a medical degree and a master's in public health. So That's outstanding. This application is unique in a way because we don't get too many medical doctors with clinical experience. So this is something you'd want to note in your review that he's medical he has a medical degree, and he has a master's in public health. That is really impressive to a public health organization. Obviously, it was impressive to GBC Health because they chose him. For current professional position, so he's currently when he applied, a medical officer at a hospital, and he has very technical experience. This makes his application unique and impressive, that he's really doing HIV/AIDS care and treatment, and that he's provided some detail here of what he's doing. Sometimes that, again, that's sort of more field experience than than academic experience, and I like to see both. As we go through the application, you'll see he has both the more field practical experience, and he also has sort of the more office environment experience in nonprofit management. So other employment experiences, as you can see, he's worked for International Center for AIDS and Care Treatment Programs. Great experience working for an international organization, and clearly a lot of great experience here in public health and HIV/AIDS, sexual and reproductive health, and specific technical experience. I like this second employment experience that he did a voluntary internship in Scotland with the National Health Service. So he has experience in an international work environment and being a volunteer. So this may make it easier to adapt to a U.S. work culture. And you can see he has some great skills that he's listed here in his description. The other experiences he lists, are as medical officers in hospitals, and you can read his specific technical skills here where he's actually doing clinical work, performing minor surgical procedures, and coordinating care and attending to patients' complaints. That's valuable to a lot of organizations. So great, and as we scroll down to his, so when he applied, we actually allowed them to list 5 skills. We've shortened it to 4, but since then. But here he could list 5 skills, and as we read through these, you'll be able to see that one he lists a lot of description here, really concrete examples, and describes his experience really well, which sets him apart from the previous application we looked at and other ones that are in the sort of 80-70 range. And the other thing that to notice as he lists these skills is that even though a lot of the experience he's listed so far is more clinical work, he does show that he has skills that can be applicable in other nonprofit management other nonprofit environments, in an office environment, like capacity building and fundraising. Those are skills that he can apply in a new work environment, not just at a hospital. So, he's really given a lot of thought to these responses. And you can see they're just longer and more detailed and more impressive than the responses that the last applicant gave, where he describes, this is capacity building, so he talks about different trainings he's provided here. Skill number two, he talks about his experience fundraising and doing some marketing with the newspaper. So these are, like, skills that you don't necessarily expect a doctor to have, that we find that interesting and impressive. Partnership building, I think, is what he's talking about here. So this is really helpful. He's not just attending to patients' needs. He's really building up the partnerships of these international organizations. That's great. He's coordinating care, and he's worked with, this International Center has really received program funds from USAID and PEPFAR. If you don't know what those are, if you don't know what PEPFAR is or anything, that's fine. But if you do know, it's impressive for an organization to be receiving international funds like this. Those are probably pretty hard to get. In skill five, he's talking about his research skills. And it's important to note that he has experience with specific programs that an organization may find useful. So, like, SPSS is a statistical package, as he lists here. EndNote is a research program to manage references. So these are things that would be useful to an organization that's expecting him to do research. That really shows that he's not just, writing a paper. He's really doing solid technical research here. So for interest areas, it's sort of what you expect from looking at his previous employment. HIV/AIDS, public and community health, race and ethnicity is actually interesting here, reproductive and sexual health, and youth development. So, again, it's showing a unified story here that he has. His really strong point is public health, and that's helpful to us as we're placing people, that we know, okay, this is who this person is. This is their strong point. He's a specialist in public health. That's really great. And like I said before, I put this comment here, he has had experience in the field and in an office environment. So he's a well-rounded candidate. And he lists that here, that he's not just a physician, but he's versatile with managing people and doing program management, things like that. He talks about his trainings. He talks about the research he's done. Here, he's a UNICEF-certified peer educator trainer. That's an impressive qualification. You might note that in your review. These kinds of certifications that he's gotten. And he's implemented. I like this that he's implemented reproductive health campaigns at the community level. Those are valuable skills to an organization that they can do that kind of campaigning advocacy kind of work. And then youth development is something that you may not have realized from looking at the rest of his application, but he really justifies it here by talking about how he's mentored youth in life planning skills and youth development programs. This is a well-written response here. Language skills, again, he also lists himself as fluent here, but it's important to match up his self-identified fluency with the actual fluency in the application. In this case, it's consistent and accurate. His written English is nearly perfect, so that makes sense to me, seeing that he's fluent. His international English test here, we allow applicants to put that, but it's not required. It's nice that he has some other languages, but it doesn't necessarily, like, Yoruba won't necessarily help him at many host organizations, and the fact that he only has some French, it's not necessarily something that makes him stand out, but it's nice that he has some second languages. For accomplishments, please list your significant leadership roles, and the next question is actually please list significant awards and recognitions. So he's listed a lot here. He's received merit awards, a scholarship. That's impressive, and again, that's one of those things that boosts his application from, like, a so-so score to a 100 or, in the high 90s or something like that. He can pay the deposit. He can submit the medical clearance form. He passes those eligibility requirements. when you get to these essay questions, they're just really strong, well-written responses. He follows the third-person biography instructions. Again, it's important for him to have a good biography because it's the first impression from a host organization. And he really provides detailed, concrete examples. This is a well-written biography that we could pretty much cut and paste this and put this on our website once he became a fellow. You know, he really talks about his experience here, and it's impressive biography. Again, he has an impressive response for why do you want to be an Atlas Corps fellow. He has specific areas that he wants to improve. This is really good for boosting his application. He doesn't just say, I want to have more experience in the nonprofit sector. He really talks about, he wants to take more responsibility. He wants to acquire communications and basic management skills, capacity building skills. He hopes to have a better understanding of the process of policy formulation and implementation. These are specific things that he wants to work on during his fellowship year. So it's good that he has specific examples, and it's good that we want to make sure his reasoning is aligned with the actual content of the fellowship. Like we said here in the comment, a response of, I want to be a fellow so I can get a paid job in the United States, is a response that would raise red flags. We don't see that too often in someone who makes it to this stage of the process, but if someone did have a response like that, that would be a very big red flag to us. He shows that he not only wants to go back to his home country and apply his skills there, but he has specific things he wants to learn. Why should a host organization select you as a fellow? This is important. It's basically asking the fellow to market themselves. Some applicants are better at this than others. Some applicants just put, oh, I'm hardworking, have a lot of experience. They just sort of, yeah, I don't know. It's not necessarily an impressive response when people put like something like that. But he really markets himself well. He lists specific skills he has, specific experience, and the work that he's done, and this is a convincing essay if you're a host organization looking at this. And again, he has a strong experience for, this is one of the essay questions we've taken out since this application cycle, so we wouldn't even need to look at that. What is your plan for when you return home after the fellowship? We want to make sure fellows have a vision for themselves post-fellowship. We're not here to determine whether it's realistic or achievable, but we want to make sure they've thought about it and it involves them returning to their home country. This response really shows that that he intends to take up a leadership position in nonprofit organizations in Nigeria, and that he has an idea of what kind of organization he wants to work for. And secondly, he intends to explore the use of internet and mobile telecommunications to disseminate behavior change information. So he has a very specific idea of what kind of work he wants to do back home. And so that's useful. It shows that this person's really thought about why this fellowship fits into their career. Again, describing both a major success and a failure in a career. Again, this is a better written and more complete response than the last application we looked at. He's really written a detailed response for both his success and his failure here. So, for example, his failure here is the inability to perform procedures without assistance after his first his year of internship. He took a while to sort of get accustomed to surgical procedures and that's a fine example of a failure that isn't necessarily something that would be a deal breaker for us, but something that shows that he's self-aware. Please describe an initiative that you've led. And again, this is a really strong and detailed response. We don't require applicants to be social entrepreneurs and really have like started an entirely new organization, but they should be able to describe an initiative that they've led, even if it's within their current organization or a volunteer project. So he talks about specific campaigns that he's led in his home country for HIV/AIDS prevention. He talks about the different phases of the project. It's very detailed and a solid response. And then finally, the last question, he needs to demonstrate a sense of adventure, independence, and cultural adaptability. This is a strong response that shows that he'll be able to adapt to life in the U.S. because he's been through a similar experience in Scotland, and he's had to live on, you know, a very basic stipend and so on. So that is useful for his adaptability. And I just want to take a brief look at these attachments. So he has attached his recommendation forms here. We don't usually penalize applicants for having mediocre letters of recommendation. We're basically looking to that they have something and looking for red flags in these recommendations. And like Scott said before, we don't penalize them if someone does not have recommendations attached. You shouldn't necessarily mark them down because it could just mean that they've emailed them into us and we haven't attached them yet. So don't mark someone down if they don't have recommendations attached, but you may want to look at this briefly and see, that they have a decent-looking application or recommendation. So there's two recommendations here. And the last attachment here is his English test, where they have to do two essays in 60 minutes. It's a timed English writing test. You don't need to read this or factor this into the score, really, but it's attached here because host organizations want to see it, and sometimes it does help you get a better sense of their English ability. As you can see here, Old Delhi has great English, and you can see that in his application and his English test. So that's the application that got Guy 100, and then in just 5 minutes, I know we're running behind schedule, I want to just take a brief look at this one that we basically consider I don't want to say a failure, but someone that we would disqualify. It looks like it's not quite open, so I'm just going to have to pull it up real quick. Okay, selection board. Okay, this is the one I want. Okay, so here is the application that's a 60, or I should say below a 60. To maximize it that way. Okay. So this is someone who would be disqualified. So let me just sort of fly through it. You'll be able to see pretty quickly why this person is not such a great applicant. This person's also traveled extensively, but that doesn't necessarily excuse the rest of their application. They've listed relatives living in the United States. Sometimes that can make it more difficult to achieve a visa, but these are pretty distant, like a maternal cousin. That's not necessarily so difficult if they're a little bit more distant relative. So this person does have advanced degrees. So this is a good example of someone who probably does have great qualifications, but they just sort of fell flat on their application. And this is where you can maybe make a note of inconsistencies in their application. So here, how did they achieve their master's in 2003 before they achieved their bachelor's in 2007? So if there's inconsistencies or gaps in their application, it's confusing to you, that's the same as if you saw gaps on a resume or confusing information on a resume for someone you were hiring at your own organization. It doesn't look great. So make a note of that if you see confusing stuff like that. So compare this employment description to the last two we looked at, legal drafting. That tells you almost nothing about what he did, and it's a very short description. He has up to 100 words here. This is really just not putting the effort in. He was president of an organization he lists as an employment experience. It's a volunteer position and not a real full-time position. We do consider volunteer work, and that's valuable, but really we'd like to see more employment experience. It should be significant. So he's volunteering as president of this chapter. That's good, but it's just not super impressive. Some other things that do not seem like full-time positions. And again, his descriptions are pretty short. You can't quite tell what he did. This one, director of legal affairs at this UN association, this seems like a more legitimate position, but again, the description is really vague. He's telling you more about what the organization does. It's a student organization for the UN, and he's legal director. It doesn't tell you anything about his actual responsibilities. It's just a short description that doesn't tell you much. For his skill sets, you'll see there's a lot of spelling and grammatical errors in this section. We've highlighted them here. A few spelling errors and grammatical errors are okay, but this is just not looking professional. I'd be a little bit embarrassed to send this to a host organization and say it was one of the best applicants we have. And he's also just not detailed enough. It just doesn't really tell you a lot about what he did. Same here for the interest areas. Just not enough detail here. Again, compare this to Oladele's application or that anonymous middle-of-the-road application we looked at. Just not a lot of detail here. For law, he just says, I'm a lawyer by profession. You know, Oladele was a doctor by profession, but he provided a lot of detail about his experience in public health. This person's just providing, just saying, I'm a doctor, or sorry, I'm a lawyer. Just trust me that I have a really good experience. It's pretty short and not a lot of detail here. Language proficiency. So he says, you know, as a medium of instruction for his university study, but if it was a medium of instruction, his level of English should be a little bit higher. There's a lot of errors here, like I said, and that is something you could score them down on the rubric under English proficiency. He doesn't list any award or recognitions. Like I said, that's not going to disqualify someone, but it does show that he's not as impressive as other applicants. Make a note here that he says no, that he cannot pay the deposit. It's not something we would necessarily disqualify a candidate for, but we would ask them about it in the interview because we do generally want people to pay this, and it shows it bodes poorly for their fellowship year if they can't pay the deposit. And then once you scroll down to the essays, it really becomes clear the difference between him and the other two applications. Just not a very good personal biography. There's a lot of spelling and grammar errors. He does not go into detail about what he's done. Basically just outlines his course of study. Again, you should always be considering, how does this look to a host organization? How is it going to look if we send them, something like this where it vacillates between first person and third person? He's basically just, there's a lot of errors. He's just sort of listing courses he's taken. It just doesn't impress you that much other than his actual degrees. Same here. For these essay questions, many errors, very short, very vague. The response doesn't make a lot of sense. I won't read it to you word for word, but you don't read it and go get an idea, who is this person? It's kind of just vague and doesn't make a whole lot of sense. These responses are rambling. They're solid ideas, but they're not expressed professionally or articulately. This is important to really pay attention to, that he has great qualifications. He is a lawyer, but the essay questions can just really look unprofessional and really drag down an applicant's qualifications. So just a lot of errors here. It's not a very well-written essay. Very short answer. It doesn't look like the candidate took time to think about and answer these questions. And if they can't put their effort into an application, what does that say about them as a candidate for this fellowship? Again, some really short answers here, as you can see. Just he has 300 words here. For failure, he says, probably I have failed to involve myself in the absolute professionalism. What does that mean? And also, it really makes me doubt his professionalism, obviously, that he lists that as a failure. And some short answers here. This response for the last question, it actually does look professional and is of adequate length, but it's a little bit too little too late here at the end. It's inconsistent with the quality of the other responses, and it looks more like a personal biography, but it submits as a response to question 7 as opposed to the response for his biography. So he actually does have some decent details here, and it's better written, but why is he just getting to the better written response in question 7 as opposed to the first ones? So that's the end of the essay. This person would score below a 60, and they would be disqualified. We would not forward this to a host organization because it would look bad to them, and we don't want to give a bad impression to host organizations or be wasting their time with applications that they're not going to accept. So that... I appreciate you listening to my long soliloquy on these three examples of applications. We have a little bit of time left, and I know it's getting late, so I don't want to hold you guys too long. But what questions do you have? If you have questions, you can either unmute your line and say them now, or you can type them in the chat box, and I will I'll answer them the best I can. And is there anything I'm forgetting, Scott?
No, sorry, I had to unmute my line there. It's a long presentation, but there's a lot of really great information in there, and
yeah.
I think there's no substitute for
Sorry, let me see.
Sorry, Scott.
Okay. Sorry, I was trying to dial in on both lines, but
okay.
There's no substitute for actually reading the applications and going through them yourself. I mean, Eduardo has done this for many years. The application hasn't changed a lot from each cycle, and you guys are all smart and done similar types of things in the past. So hopefully this just gives a sense of some of our better applicants and worse applicants, and there's no hard and fast rules here, but it gives you a sense of the type of people we're trying to get. So I think you did a great review, Meredith.
Great. No questions on my end from Eduardo. Great. If there are any questions, now's a great time to ask them. But if you think of something later, or as you're reading through these applications, again, I attached them to the email I sent out today telling you the details for the webinar, and they are also posted on our Google site, which I'll send you the link to in the next day or two. Read through the applications or at least skim through them, and you can see I tried to talk as much as I could about the difference between these responses and show you why one score is better than the other, but I really encourage you to read through them yourselves. Okay.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Meredith.
Great. So I'll be sending you more information about just some logistical selection board stuff, like adding you to our listserv and the Facebook group and some other stuff like that. And also I'll be sending you information about the next steps as far as like actually reading some applications and our timeline for that. And again, that can start as soon as probably this weekend. We're going to start assigning applications and then it'll go for like the next month or 2 month and a half. So I'll be sending you more information about that, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the next, or may not seeing, but hosting you with the next training, which will be next Thursday, August 23rd from 6 to 8 p.m. is the time we chose. And hopefully that works for as many people as possible, but if not, we will be recording it. I really appreciate all of your patience during all these technical challenges. Again, I swear it's usually a lot better than this. And for the next webinar, we'll make sure that we've gotten everything worked out, and we'll probably just stick to our old webinar platform because that seems to be more foolproof. So great. So I really appreciate your attention and all your support, and we'll be following up soon.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, guys. Great to hear everyone's voice.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, I'm going to stop recording.